Today's episode of The Thriller Zone is sponsored by Blackstone Publishing and the brilliant new techno thriller 4 Minutes by the number one internationally best-selling author duo, Brian Andrews and Jeff Wilson. 4 Minutes is available now from your favorite bookseller.
Hi, Tammy Temple.
Hi, David Temple.
Welcome to The Thriller Zone.
Well, happy Monday and good morning.
I'm pretty excited about this one. And oh, by the way, no, that's okay. When she looks at me, in case you're wondering, we're sitting side by side. Oh, and if she does this, then of course you have this. It's just crazy. But you know, we wanted to keep it real for a Thriller Zone. And Tammy, I got to tell you something. We got a whole lot of attention when people started finding out that you were going to be on the show. I'm not sure, you know, I think it's because of your wit and your charm and your beauty, but it's pretty nice, isn't it?
I should come to the Thriller Zone more often. Thank you.
Yeah. And so this Thriller Zone, we thought we'd do something a little bit different. Usually we're talking with thriller authors, movie makers, book writers, filmmakers, etc. And this one is a little bit different, still about thrillers and books and movies, but we thought we have been, you know, in between the tail end of COVID and the first of 2021, we have been watching a lot of series and movies and so forth. And
is it the tail end of COVID?
In my mind, in my optimistic mind.
That could
mind.
Lead us down a whole different podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll just say in the continuing saga of COVID.
Yeah. COVID madness is alive and thriving.
Right. And it's going to be a little bit challenging, but still kind of fun. And who cares, because we make all the rules. A lot of our lists are going to be a little bit similar because...
Well, we're birds of a feather.
And we live together.
Oh, that was a great rhyme.
Yeah, thank you.
Very fast and clever, David.
So I've got some my own personal structure to this countdown, for lack of a better term. Tammy has her own personal structure to her countdown of her own personal structure. And we're just going to, you know, we're going to fly by. In case you're wondering where we are, we're at Jake and Renee's beautiful home in just outside Colorado Springs. Tell us about it, Tammy.
Well, Jake is number one son, Jake, and Renee is super mom, Renee Davis, with little Jack, almost three, and little Allison, almost one, nipping at their heels. We've been here knee-deep in baby drool and almost three-year-old gibberish for the last 8 days, and absolutely loving it. However, I'm kind of craving a nice adult conversation. Watching Sunday football yesterday was a highlight.
Yeah, besides the fact that it was Dallas and the Red, well, we watched three games, but
we
the fact that we got to see adults talking on television and playing football, it was, I think I turned to Dennis and said, thank God for a little alcoholic beverage and anything except cartoons.
It's been a super sweet visit, and to have, you know, these little tykes just so happy to see us. And on the heels of COVID madness, when we haven't been able to spend a lot of time with family and friends, it's been a glorious trip.
Yes, it has.
That said, I'm super stoked to be part of the Thriller Zone today. I am not an avid reader so much right now, so most of my stuff will be based upon content. And as David referenced earlier, we've spent a lot of time with content. And I feel like even though this is not my industry, I could kind of hold my own in a conversation about character development, about plot, about arcs. So I'm, again, super excited to be here.
Yeah, honey, you can do more than carry, hold your own, because as we were talking about our favorites, we kept referencing some of the same things. And one interesting thing about my wife is, I've been writing now on and off for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. And she, when I'm watching television or series and so forth, I'll have a tendency, sometimes it's not always so fun. I'll go, oh, I'll be mumbling, oh, I bet that guy's gonna go do this. And within seconds, it will happen. And she'll look at me and go, what?
We do a high five.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Oh, one of those.
Yeah. So now what's really interesting is if I keep my mouth shut, a nearer probability, she will do it. And I'll look at her and go,
boom.
Yeah. And it's so much fun. So. Yeah.
Hey, we try to make the best out of everything and have fun with everything we do. So for anyone that follows my social media or David's, it is a love fest. We celebrate love energy and we just try to put out goodness, positivity, joy, peace, love, happiness, and just to try to keep that that good energy flowing.
Yeah. We were probably hippies in another life.
Probably.
Yeah. So to recap, we're going to have some top movies.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have some top TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have the top, I came up with top 10 books because it's such a classic line. Now, as I will probably say again later, I wish it was the top, I want to say 36 or 38, because that's about the number of books I've read since we launched the show in June. Can you believe it was June?
I know. Yeah, in Tahoe.
In Tahoe, and my very first guest was May Cobb. Mm-hmm. Shout out to May Cobb.
Great book cover.
Oh, love that. The lipsticks and the gun. Yeah. And it has been a glorious ride, and it's only 6 months old. We're going to kick into season two in January. You've probably seen our promos. I think our very first guest of the year is Ace Atkins.
Wow, that's impressive.
I'm a little nervous. Just a little nervous. He's a big boy. Anyway, so great shows ahead in the new year, and we thank you for all your support, your reviews, which have been spectacular, your voicemails that you've left on the channel, on the website, thethrillerzone.com, the reviews on Apple. Now, I think, Spotify is now allowing reviews.
Oh, that's great.
Which is super cool. And thanks for the Thriller Zone love. Why don't we do this? Why don't we get started with, how many movies did you come up with? I'm going to peek at your notes.
Well, I have my top three, and then I also outlined some big surprises just in case we go there. And then some movies and series that I really wanted to like, but some of the acting was a bit over the top.
Yeah, I'm having fun. And what I liked is you had something like an honorable mention or something, or a surprise, and I had some of those as well.
Yeah.
And so anyway, why don't we start with you, young lady? And mine is top five. Yours is, I want to say, top three, and go for it.
I'm going to go 3, 2, 1.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
So recently we watched two movies on, I think both were on Netflix, but I could be wrong, that really took me by surprise. And again, a lot of this was storyline, character development. One was Power of the Dog with Benedict Cumberbatch and Kristen Dunst. And then I would say The Unforgivable with Sandra Bullock. Again, you know, just a surprise for me that it was going to create that much conversation between the two of us. And we both, it's funny, some people have a 5-star rating. I think we should have a sweaty palm rating, because we were both talking about how our palms were sweating with both of these. My number one, do you want me to share my number one, or would you like to go with your 3 and 2? Oops, hello, that's a phone.
Yes.
No Time to Die, James Bond. Who would have thought you would cry, get teary, me, at the end of a James Bond movie? I really liked it. It provoked the two of us to go back to the very beginning of Daniel Craig's James Bond movies, and to be able to watch the storyline since we knew that how it was going to end was really good. It gave me a bigger appreciation for the arc of the whole series with him, and I really enjoyed it. I could watch his James Bond movies several times each, and I think we have several times each.
Yeah. And we could go down the rabbit hole of, you know, which is the best James Bond, which is kind of a ridiculous conversation because everybody has a different favorite. And you might have a different favorite for a different reason in a different, you know, decade or so forth.
Yeah.
Now, so you have completed your list of movies. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Those are my top three.
Okay, so I have five, and I just did five because of random things, and I'm going to count it down. So my number five was, and this was more of a mystery and less of a thriller, but it stars Denzel Washington, Jared Leto, and Rami Malek, and it's The Little Things. Mm-hmm. That was remarkable mystery. Number three, it got a lot of rave reviews, and I was a little skeptical at first. I don't even know why, because I would watch anything that Matt Damon starred in, Camille Cotton, and a little known fact, Abigail Breslin, which I almost didn't recognize at first, she was fantastic. Little known fact, she and I, we were together in The Ultimate Gift 15 years ago with the original Jim Gardner from Rockford Files.
I think you still get checks for that movie, don't you?
I do.
We get a coffee every now and then on that residual.
I get a coffee every now and then, but that movie was Stillwater, and it was fantastic. Brings me to number two, which I personally loved, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, honey, but when I first saw this trailer, I said, I am so watching that. And I think you may have went, you know, action-packed thriller, except it's all action. And it stars Maggie Q,
favorite,
Michael Keaton, and Samuel Jackson in The Protégé.
That was one of my big surprises. And so was the Denzel Washington, Jared Leto, Rami Malek movie, The Little Things. So you and I had that in our best of. The Protégé was a big surprise for me. Generally, if you're going to turn on a movie like that, it's Friday night, I'm sleepy, and I know I'll probably just snooze on the couch while it's happening. But that kept me plugged in. The storyline was great. And, you know, I've really liked watching Michael Keaton as of late.
Yeah, he's going to come up later in our list, too. Michael Keaton has always been a favorite. I mean, I can't remember. Maybe Mr. Mom was the very first time I saw him. I went, who is this guy? And I always remember him holding up the little kid in front of a hand blow dryer in a bathroom. Oh, my gosh. And then, of course, my number one, similar to Tammy's, No Time to Die with Daniel Craig, Léa Seydoux, Ralph Fiennes, Christoph Waltz, and Rami Malek. Yeah. I could go on and on about that movie, except I won't. And I'll just say it was everything you want in a James Bond movie. I did see on Twitter a couple of haters out there going.
Haters are gonna hate.
Yeah. And it was just, I'm like, it's a movie. Enjoy the ride. So there's our movies. Did you give all your surprises on the movie?
I had another surprise, and that was The Last Duel with Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and there were a couple notable female actresses that I did not take note of, but that movie, again, same thing. I thought, I am a historical fiction person. If I'm going to read, I really do enjoy historical fiction. However, I was like, was this part of some other deal? Like they made a movie and part of that contract was you have to do this like 1200 century, you know, movie and it's just gonna be janky. It was not janky at all. And I loved how they did the axe.
Yes.
So one of the series that I enjoyed several years ago was The Affair. And I really liked how they would give the male perspective and the female perspective. It was fascinating because for all of us, you know, we see things through our own filter and then we share that through our own filter. And when you compare the same experience to somebody else's experience, it's really interesting how the differences present themselves.
Yeah.
And that's also how the director laid out the duel. in Acts, where the history unfolds through the eyes of each of these main characters. And it's fascinating how they put that movie together. I really enjoyed it. I'd recommend it.
I thought, oh, is this a remake of or a twist on Game of Thrones kind of thing? And I was like, you know, whatever. But man, the minute it started, I was all in, completely committed. And you're right. That reveal each time, and it took me a second because I probably wasn't paying as close attention as you. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, that's his perspective. Oh, that's her perspective. Mm-hmm. And boy, it was so well done. You didn't feel like you were watching a he said. Same scene,
No, the director did a really good job of that.
Yeah.
Really nicely done.
Masterfully done. Now, here's a place that Tammy and I have spent a lot of time, along with many people all around the world, especially during the aforementioned COVID, was the television series and the streaming services. I think, is it safe to say they have nearly outdone movies in general, or it kind of feels that way a little bit?
Well, and the interesting thing is, as we watch movies on Netflix, and I might go so far as saying Amazon Prime, but I can't specifically back this up, is that on a series, you could sit down and in a weekend watch 8 hours or 9 hours worth of content. With a movie, you know, we're so conditioned to 90 minutes. However, we referenced The Power of the Dog. We referenced The Unforgivable. We just watched the other night, Look Up or Don't Look Up.
Don't Look Up, yeah.
Don't Look Up with Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio and Jonah Hill and Meryl Streep. And that movie was 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what happens with Netflix and Amazon movies, if they will tend to lengthen their movies, because again, we're all so conditioned to do this binge type watching.
Yeah, good point. Really good point. Just watched, I read something in the New York Times this morning that Hollywood is now stacking the deck on projects with, you know, it used to be you could have one major movie star lead the movie, win the audience, gain the Oscar, la la la. Now they're stacking the deck with multiple stars because they're, for lack of a better term, they're afraid that they might not get quite the audience that they once had. So when you stack the Lawrences and the DiCaprios and the Hills and the Streeps and so forth and so on, it is though they're saying, well, we can't lose here.
Right.
They're also paying their stars. I just read DiCaprio $30 million for that movie alone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they got to get a good return, so they're going to stack the deck. Anyway, that movie is surprisingly, what's the word?
It kind of jumped the shark.
Yeah.
To reference Happy Days.
Yeah. It's interesting. It is longer than it needs to be, but
yeah, they had me up until a certain point, and then I thought, wow, we're really gonna go there. But I think the point was made, if the metaphor is referencing climate change and you know, the reality of what we're all facing with climate change, you know, I get it. And I thought it was well done for the most part.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the television series. How many do you have?
I have 4.
Okay, and I have 5. Are you going from 5 to 1, or you want to go 5 down to 1?
Yeah, I'll just.
So I'll start with 5, and then you go to 4.
You start.
Okay.
Do we have to go to therapy?
My number 5 is Mayor of Easttown, starring Kate Winslet and Guy Pearce. That was the surprise. That made me view Kate, and Kate Winslet, spectacular actress, but it made me view her in a whole new way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure why. Maybe because she let her, I don't know, but it was.
She became mayor.
Yeah, exactly.
I also had that series on my list. I'm a big Barry Levinson fan. And he directed a couple of those episodes. I just thought it was really well done. And again, from a sweaty palm perspective, yeah. We would miss a couple of weeks. So we would have two or three episodes that we could watch.
Yeah.
And then we always had about an hour conversation afterwards, because we would watch the after the episode breakdown where the actors and the directors and the writers talk about, you know, what each person was going through and what they were trying to portray. And then David and I would sit and we'd have our own conversation about the episode or episodes. And yeah, that was super well done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've always liked the director's cut on DVDs for you to hear what their thoughts were and so mm-hmm. forth. But yeah, I'm going to integrate the sweaty palm meter in future shows.
I think we should.
Yeah, because we're always doing that. I'm like, I know I'm really raptured when all of a sudden I'm going, oh, geez, there go my palms again.
Yeah.
Now, number four, and it's so funny, we were having a conversation over football yesterday about, hey, have you watched Mayor of Easttown? No, but I saw Mayor of Kingstown. Wait a minute, Mayor of Kingstown, no, and it was hilarious. But Mayor of Kingstown with Jeremy Renner and Diane Wiest has become one of my new all-time favorites. Not a light family show.
No. I like that program too. It's, I think I'm sensitive to over-the-top drama, and it can kind of hinge a bit on that, the excessiveness of the intensity I can get without being beat over the head. And that show can have a little bit of that.
And do you mean intensity as in violence or just intensity in general?
In the act, you know, sometimes in the acting, it's like, okay, I get that you're a badass and you're a gangbanger or, you know, whatever. There was also, I will tell you, the last episode that we watched haunted me for a few days. It was very disturbing. However, I'm sure it's real, and that actually happens in the world. I just don't know that I necessarily want to face that reality all the time.
All right, what's your next one?
Well, I will say I'm not exactly sure this was a thriller. There was a mystery component to it, and I continued to laugh out loud all the time. It was White Lotus with Connie Britton, Molly Shannon, Steve Zahn. There was a mystery to it. There was a lot of nuance. I think I could watch the series again and again and pick up the subtleties of things and that I had missed prior. But so White Lotus, it was an HBO Max series, and you probably heard me laughing in the other room as you were working.
Yeah, she enjoyed it more than I did.
Yeah. It's just kind of some goofy, stupid.
Yeah, it had moments. Mm-hmm. Zahn?
However, yeah. Z-A-H-N.
Yeah, Zahn, I think. He always cracks me up, yeah. And, but yeah, not on my list. Here's a guy that I would practically watch, read the phone book on stage, mm-hmm. to borrow an old cliche. Jeff Daniels, mm-hmm. and Maura Tierney starring in American Rust. Mm-hmm. Started off slow and I'm like, oh, I'm going to hang in there because I love Jeff Daniels. Mm-hmm. And it's worth hanging in there because when it gets to the crescendo, oh my Rowan, you're literally, remember we sat there going, American Rust, watch it.
I liked that too. And Jeff Daniels is a huge favorite of mine. And I enjoy his interviews. You know, he's steeped in kindness in that Midwestern integrity and decency. And I just really enjoy him as a person. So I'm with you. I would watch him climb a wall.
Yeah. You know? He also was on 60 Minutes, and you constantly referenced mm-hmm. this for me as a bit of encouragement when I'm feeling, God, can a guy my age with this lack of track record in writing really make it? And we pull up the 60 Minutes interview with
Steve.
Doesn't matter.
Hello.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about, you know, if my 60 two-year-old self had said that this was going to happen, and they were referencing the Broadway play
To Kill a Mockingbird.
And he said, if you told me told my 62-year-old self that this would be happening, I wouldn't have believed it. And he has a better line than that. But how is it you always reference it for me? Because it's such a great encouragement.
Well, he talked about he's more successful at 63 and 64 and 65 than what he was, in the 80s and 90s when he was just really committed to trying to build a career, but also having this plan B, the safety net with a home in Michigan for his wife and his kids. And he was not going to play by the Hollywood rules. He was going to maintain what drove him, and that was a well planned out home life, a grounded home life, and he made it work. And he often refers to that 62 or 63 year old moment when To Kill a Mockingbird hit, and he just has had this resurgence in his popularity again.
Yeah, I love it. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe 60 is the new 30, something like that.
Maybe.
Now, I think we have two more. I'm going to look at your notes.
Yeah.
I have
a couple more.
Yeah. Our last two are the same. So you looks like you have a third in there. Why don't you go ahead and share that one?
Well, I really enjoyed Dope Sick. And Dope Sick was a Hulu series, and it was about oxycodone and the Slacker. Was it the Slacker family?
Sackler.
The Sacklers were slackers. Right. The Sackler family. It was just fascinating how the pieces of this puzzle came together from, the marketing of this, the development and marketing, this whole machine that went into putting this medication on the market, and how it was just this tidal wave in the medical world, and how it impacted every community across the board. I mean, we just found out this weekend that it had also impacted a family that we know and are touched by, and we had no idea. But Michael Keaton stars Peter Sarsgaard, Rosario Dawson, the Budweiser Dilly Dilly guy was
John
such a great, yeah, he was such a great surprise. He was an amazing actor, and we love him.
Yeah.
Dilly Dilly.
And Michael Stuhlbarg, who was so annoying yet perfect in the role of Richard Sackler.
Oh my gosh. And I've watched him in Boardwalk Empire. He was great. I really think he's an incredible actor as well.
Yeah.
But it was highly educational. And if you're kind of bummed out on life, do not watch this series because it's heavy.
Yeah.
But very well done, super informative, probably more of a docudrama than anything, but I don't think it fits the thriller category. My palms were sweaty a lot during as we watched this. So
yeah.
I thought it was excellent and very well done.
And I would totally agree on every point. And we're all aware that the opioid crisis was dangerous and foreboding and catastrophic. But when you spend an entire series watching it like this, I learned a lot. And mm-hmm. I guess in my own stupidity or naivete, I never knew. And of course, it's dramatization of Hollywood by Hollywood. But I never knew that the addiction was to the degree that it was. And then it forced me to research
right
after that. And but the greed of the Sackler family.
Yeah, and diabolical nature of how they created this machine with callous disregard of how it would impact our world, yeah, basically, but specifically the United States,
yeah,
because as they tried to take this drug into Europe and I think Germany and a couple of other countries, they could not get the drug in those countries. So
diabolical is a great word.
Yeah, it was a very well done series.
Now on a positive note, in a series that we loved, season 3 came out, we watched it in its entirety in either one or two settings, sittings, and then we turn around and start the entire series over again, and we're now in season 2. Yeah, we've just started season 2. But it's about a wicked patriarch starring Brian Cox and his children, Jeremy Strong, Sarah Snook, Kieran Culkin, and Alan Ruck, and the series is Succession. Wow, one of the best television series of recent memory for me. You too?
Oh, I agree. And again, to David's point, like watching it season 1 with a couple of years in between, season 2 with a year in between, and then season 3, you miss that connectivity between the seasons. And I would say going back and watching it all over again has provided a fresh look into the characters, the development, and really an appreciation for the actors and the personalities that they're portraying. And you can really see how, how the nature of how this man parented his kids and used his kids and manipulated his kids is, it's such a well done series. And then of course the director's cut behind the episode sessions at the end of each episode is fascinating.
Adam McKay has really surprised me over the years. You know, he started off with Will Ferrell and did mostly comedy, but he's picked up so many projects since then, and this is just a fascinating way it's shot. The portrayal of all the different characters. And the word that I kept thinking of while you were speaking is nuance. When you go back and you start with number one, there's so much nuance that you may have caught the first time, but how now having seen the progression of the family, you really do, the nuance blossoms in front of your eyes. And you realize, especially with Jeremy Strong, who plays Kendall, just an extraordinary performance of a guy who wants so bad for daddy to love, so bad to make daddy impressed, have daddy say, I'm proud of you, son. And it never happened. And the ruthless disregard and conniving manipulation by Brian Cox, Roy Logan character. We would catch ourselves looking at each other going, can you believe this?
There is a great article in the New Yorker, and it's an interview of Jeremy Strong, or with Jeremy Strong. It's lengthy, but it's so well done. And it talks about his acting style and what he goes through in bringing Kendall Logan to life. And then this writer also interviewed the cast and talked about how Jeremy's style impacts the cast, because he seems to be more of a method actor. His flavor of acting tends to try to stay in character and really become that person. And then the impact of that on the other actors was also interesting to read and learn about.
Yeah, I'm not sure I read that, but I will say that having done a little bit of acting, and I'm not a method actor, but I really appreciate and respect that, because you work so hard to get inside this character and to become that character. And so that when you in movies, you shoot a scene, you take a long break, you shoot a reverse, you take a long break, you shoot a wide, a close, that sort of way. And if you stay in that character, it's easier for you to really cement your connection to the audience. So I dig that. But boy, you really felt depressed when he was on screen.
I know.
You wanted to drink a new dress as well.
No.
Or was it
almost,
just
but not really. I would say there's a great podcast, and it's with Adam McKay and Smartless.
Yes.
Smartless guys interviewed Adam McKay, and it gives you a real sense of who he is as a person and a director and what he tries to bring to life. And I was introduced to him in The Big Short, And The Big Short was all about the 2008 housing market crash. And he said part of the reason why he wanted to do that movie was because his own father was caught in that death spiral. So it's interesting what you learn about a person in these podcasts or in these after the episode discussions about why they do what they do and why they're influenced by certain characters and what they're trying to, you know, just bring to life or the story they're trying to share.
Yeah. I have one honorable mention that didn't, only because I was doing top five, because sometimes I am a rule follower. And I wanted to mention that, I think you have a note about it too, as well, is the show Hit and Run.
Yeah.
Starring the phenomenal actor, Leo Raz, which, oddly enough, introduced us to a different series called Fauda.
Thank you, Don Bentley.
Yes. That's right. Don Bentley on the show introduced us. And I think I told you right away, we got on the show. And wow, what a remarkable actor. And I think the reason he's so remarkable is he is actually in a branch of the military as well.
I thought he was in Israeli intelligence or something.
Yeah.
Formerly, but that was a really good series. It was one we learned quickly to not watch right before we did Lights Out.
Yeah.
The other show that I wanted to bring up was Ozark.
Oh.
That would have been in 2021.
Yes.
We would definitely have Ozark as maybe the top number one show. We really, really like that series.
Yeah, Ozark is, that would have been like Succession and Ozark if you had to pick a TV series. I cannot get enough of that.
Yeah. And that probably hits the definition closer to thriller than what Succession does.
Yes.
Oh, well, it's our show.
Yeah.
We can do whatever we want today.
We geeked out on Succession, so there. All right, now it's time to go to books. Now, I have 10, and I have a little tiny blurb with each one. And the reason I did that is for viewers who are new to the Thriller Zone and may not be aware of these authors, I want to give you a very tiny blurb directly from their books. So I'm not taking much of any liberty with it, but it'll synopsize the book in a very tiny form and hopefully entice you to go read the book.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with number 10. We'll work our way down. In a town that's obsessed with dark secrets, where the currency of power is information, the White House has kept a huge one for decades, charged with the task of protecting the office of the presidency. The keeper of secrets has now vanished without a trace. Who protects the secrets of the presidency? The Body Man, by newcomer Eric Bishop, is number 10.
Ah, and all around great guy.
Probably one of the nicest guys I've met on the planet in the last handful of years, and I wish him huge success. I won't break down why I like each book, but I wanted to synopsize so that you can gain a very good understanding. But The Body Man is my number 10.
And Eric is one of those guys, if we had a nice single female that was looking for a nice guy, that Eric is that person. It's like, oh, we would introduce those two in a minute.
Oh, ding, ding, matchmaker Tammy.
Well, we have to add a little bit of flair.
Sure.
And color.
Sure. All right, next, Elise Littlejohn has it all, an Ivy League law degree, a well-paying job as a corporate attorney in Midtown Atlanta, and for a forefront relationship with a rich, charming executive who happens to be her white boss. But everything changes one cold January morning when Elise arrives in the executive suite to find her boss dead. All Her Little Secrets by Wanda Morris is number 9.
I want to read that book.
It is, you liked that show. I remember you coming to me and saying,
yeah, I really like her. It was a great show.
Now, an explosive crime drama evokes a mystical Brooklyn where the sidewalks are cracked, where Virgin Mary statues tilt in fenced front yards, and where smudges of moonlight reflect in puddles even on the blackest nights. Shoot the Moonlight Out by William Boyle is number 8.
You talked about this one for a while.
I could not get it out of my head. I don't know what it is. The characters are terrifically real. It has little twists and turns you don't see coming, and it was just remarkable.
I'm trying not to have resting bitch face while you're reading me, so.
Angel, Kentucky, just another one of America's forgotten places where opportunities vanished long ago and the opioid crisis has reached a fever pitch. Now, when the small town is rocked by the vicious killing of an entire infamous crime family, the bloody aftermath brings together three people already struggling with Angel's drug epidemic. Lost River by J. Todd Scott is number seven and one of my favorite podcasts to date.
This one haunted you too. This you talked about some of the scenes in this book.
Yeah, I hadn't, it was visceral and palpable and remarkably real. And I loved the interview with J. Todd Scott. I have it on very good authority. He's going to appear with his newest one coming out next year called The Flock. Now, when a series of devastating cyber attacks rocked the United States, Haley Chill, hint, is tasked by the deeper state to track down their source. NSA analysts insist Moscow is the culprit, but that accusation brings plenty of complications, with Haley directing the president as a double agent against the Russians. With increasing pressure on the president to steer him towards a devastating war, it's up to Haley to stop the mysterious computer hacker and prevent World War III. Savage Rose by my new friend Chris Hoddy is number six and a page ripper.
I really like this podcast too with Chris, and I like the way he spoke about Haley's development in the character between the books, because she appears in a couple of, this is a series,
Series, yes.
correct? Yeah.
Yeah, and he, rumor has it that there's a third one on the way. Yeah. Now,
Now,
the
the
next
next one,
one, Tammy and
Tammy and
I
I
both
both
love,
love,
so
so
I'm
I'm
going to
going to
read
read
it
it
quickly,
quickly,
and
and
then
then
she's
she's
got
got
several
several
notes
notes
to
to
talk
talk
about.
about.
But,
Oh.
imagine this, you've just boarded a flight to New York. There are 143 other passengers aboard, and what you don't know is that 30 minutes before the flight, your pilot's family was kidnapped. For his family to live, everyone on your plane must die. And the only way the family will survive is if the pilot follows his orders and crashes the plane. Falling by T.J. Newman is number five.
I really like this book, and I love her story. Super sweet Cinderella story, in my is how I would describe it, and I mean that with all the compliments that would come with that. Great book. I think I read it in a weekend. I sat outside in the sun after my morning runs, and you were working, and it was just a really good adventure. And I'm excited to see her and what additional things she does. I'm excited to see this book come to life, maybe in movie form.
Oh yeah, this next year.
And I'm excited to see what she does next.
Former flight
Flight attendant,
attendant, scratching down the ideas on napkins on her overnight flights, and puts it all together in a page turner. And I think it's easily one of the fastest reads I had this past year. Now, Aurora is a small town nestled in the ancient forest alongside the shores of Minnesota's Iron Lake. In the summer of 63, it's a whole world to 12-year-old Cork O'Connor. But when Cork stumbles upon the body of a man he revered, hanging from a tree in the abandoned logging camp, it is the first in a series of events that will cause him to question everything he took for granted about his hometown, his family, and himself. Lightning Strike by Kent Kruger is number four and a spectacular tapestry of craftsmanship.
I like this podcast too. He Kent is just that grounded person. You know, he just seems to have his head in the right place, great mindset, deep, soulful person. I really like that podcast.
Probably one of the nicest guys I've met, and really shares insights and lessons about writing and how not to give up and how to keep going. And but he puts it in a way that doesn't feel like a textbook off the shelf, 30-page book of, hey, how to be a winner.
Right, tips and tricks with Kent.
None of
Yeah.
that with Kent. It just really was powerful, and I so enjoy that. Now, next, CIA case officer Sam Joseph is dispatched to Paris to recruit Syrian palace official Mariam Haddad. The two fall into a forbidden relationship, which supercharges Haddad's recruitment and creates unspeakable danger when they enter Damascus to find the man responsible for the disappearance of an American spy. Damascus Station by David McCloskey. His debut is number 3 and a fantastic read.
Class act, too. What a
super,
super, to jump on your word, classy guy. The podcast was awesome. And this is another book I'm really excited to read.
And I said this to David on the show. I've said it to him since then. And he is going to be in the echelon of the Tom Clancy's and the Ken Follett's and those guys that you love. Just an in-depth research, you really gained not only the adventure that you're looking for, but insights as to how that world works. And his background in the CIA, of course, always intrigues me. Remarkable. Now, it's been 20 years since 9/11. The enemy has been patient, learning, and adapting, and ready to strike again. A new president offers hope to a country weary of conflict. He's a young, popular, self-made visionary, but he's also a man with a secret. Meanwhile, a young PhD student has gained access to a bioweapon thought to be confined to a classified military laboratory. A second-generation agent, he has been assigned a mission that will bring his adopted homeland to its knees. The Devil's Hand is by Mr. Jack Carr, and it's number 2.
Love him. And again, his books, I am so excited to read. I cannot wait for James Reese to come to life with Chris Pratt. And excited to see what
Antoine Fuqua
is the director of that. Like, hello, what a great story. Jack Carr is the coolest dude.
Yeah.
I love how he promotes his support for
wounded warriors, for veterans. He turned us on to Black Rifle Coffee. He's turned us on to so many different things that I'm just really excited about this. And I'm so genuinely happy for him.
Yeah. Yeah. When I met him at Thriller Fest in 2019, I was blown away by his down-to-earth nature and giving and kind. And sure, I want a beard like his. Sure, I have beard envy. I can't grow a beard to save my life. Yes, I want that. And I wish I could shoot a gun like him and have all the knives that he has.
How about his vehicles, the Land Cruisers?
The Land Cruiser, really, it's only one of my dream vehicles. And he's got a beautiful wife and beautiful kids. He lives in a beautiful Park City. He's
Art Deco house.
He's everything you want to be.
Yeah. You want to not like it, but he's so flippin' nice.
No, I want to like him. I want to love him.
And you do.
Yeah, I do. He's goodness. He's pure goodness. He's a massive talent, and he's going to be around for decades to
Thank
come.
Goodness.
Yeah, can we talk it? Can we gush anymore
about Jack?
Jack Carr. Now, if I could only get him on the Thriller Zone.
Well, his publicist said you could have any one of his authors, so you might have to just pull that out.
That's right, Atria Books. Shout out.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're down now to the finale. Nick Anthony has retreated to the North Carolina mountains to mourn the untimely death of his wife. Once a popular professor, Nick just wants to be left alone with his grief. But when his estranged brother and sister-in-law die in a house fire, a stunned Nick learns he has a niece, Annalise, who is missing. One of the books that captured my attention from the very first page, Never Let Go, reminds me of growing up in the Carolinas. A Fire in the Night by Chris Swan is number 1.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yes, yes, it's always hard to pick top 10. Yes, you want to give everybody number 1. Yes, it really should be like 38 because that's how many books I've read since June.
Yeah.
But these, I had to gauge on something, and it was a cross between Sweaty Palms and The Way It Hit My Heart. And Chris Swan, for some reason, captured all the little elements that you really love in a thriller. All of these books were fantastic. There are tons more. I think of so many that I could rattle on, the Don Bentleys and the Ted Bells. I could go on all day long, but these are my top 10.
That's fantastic.
Now, I do have an honorable mention, because I got to do that. I can never actually just stop at 10. So now, my honorable mention is a biographical thriller by a gal I had on many months ago, Death on Ocean Boulevard, Inside the Coronado Mansion Case by Catherine Rother. If you like true crime, you will rip through this book. And Inside Secret said that she has, this is going to be not only reinvestigated, we think, but turned into a TV series. You really enjoyed them too.
I did. I remember when this case came to life. I think it's Caitlin Rother.
It is Caitlin. I'm sorry. I wrote down Catherine. My bad.
Caitlin Rother. Yes. I remember when I was living up north in Mill Valley when this happened. And so I was fascinated by the story because it's odd. And when you listen to the podcast, Caitlin unfolds some of the layers. So you really get to see what she learned, which creates even more intrigue to the story. And I've, since that podcast, I did a little sleuthing on my own just to try to read some more about Caitlin and about her interviews around this. This particular story is very good. I'm excited.
Yeah, apologies, Caitlin. Also, thanks to Susie Spencer, who introduced me. She's another investigative journalist, and she introduced me to Caitlin and is also a remarkable gal.
Didn't Susie do a story on Andrea Yates?
Yes.
That is another fascinating read for, you know, true crime. Yeah. If you're into that, Susie's a really wonderful person and has been so supportive of you.
Yes.
I've enjoyed watching your friendship grow.
Yeah, it has been sweet.
Yeah. One thing that I have been surprised by is this writing community and how successful all of these people are. And there isn't this even an inkling of competition. It's, they just kind of wrap their arms around one another and just want to do everything they can to support people in this community. And I've loved that. It's really been a nice surprise. I'm glad you're in that world and not so much in the cutthroat nature of the movies and radio
was vicious and cutthroat, and everybody was at you at all times. They were on your back with a knife. But yeah, this community has surprised me. I first saw it at Thriller Fest and I thought, is this just showbiz light? And then as I've gotten to know them and interview all these great creators, it is amazing. And it's one last thing I wanted to mention on top of this. I do have a favorite new find. And I could probably go on and give like a multitude.
A lot of them, yeah.
A multitude of favorite new finds and top pick here, top pick there. But this one guy got my attention on a number of different levels. Maybe it's partly because I grew up around that area. The fact that I like Southern Gothic, the fact that it was a novella. So, I had a compressed amount of time at that particular time. I read the book. I got on the horn with him and we had a Thriller Zone podcast, but A Violent Gospel by Mark Westmoreland is my favorite new find, and a good old boy, just the nicest down-to-earth guy.
Good podcast. Yeah. I'm excited. So I've read this year T.J. Newman's book, The Falling, Steve Kavanaugh's The Devil's Advocate. I really enjoyed that book. Again, great character development, surprises along the way. And when you get to the end and see the master plan behind the tragedy in the story, it's fascinating. I'm going to actually hunt Steve's interviews down and try to learn a little bit more about the background of Devil's Advocate and how he kind of put pen to paper and his reasonings behind those characters. I'm excited to read David McCloskey's Damascus Station. I'm really excited to read Fred Burton's Beirut Rules.
Oh, yeah.
Both, again, great podcasts. I love the whole Middle Eastern writing. It's nothing outside of probably world history that I learned about the Middle East and the dynamics there. And I was first introduced to that area by Tom Friedman's book, Beirut to Jerusalem. And it's so, that book is so fascinating because it breaks down how complex and volatile that part of the world is. And it gives some of the history as to, you know, what happens in that area. So when you had David McCloskey on and Fred Burton, my ear was peeled a little closer to their stories.
Yeah. Well, as we begin to wrap the show up, I cannot let 2021 go without mentioning one guy who has had a humongous impact on me. I think mainly because he's a fantastic writer, and I think I've read almost every one of his books now. If not, it's on my TBR list because I have a monster pile of them yet to read. And I wanted to scoot it in on this top 10. However, I got an advanced reader's copy, and it's not actually coming out until April, but I do hope that we will have him on the podcast, Shane Salerno. And that is Don Winslow. Yeah. In my opinion, there's just very few guys that are as big a talent in this. And not only that, he's one of the nicest, gentlest, down-to-earth guys I've ever met in my life. I can't say enough nice things, but I'm going to say I have a pretty good feeling he's going to be on the Thriller Zone in 2022. That is my hope and prayer.
Well, I think Don is a great writer. I've loved watching this friendship blossom. And again, speaking to what I referenced earlier, this community, regardless of the success of the writer, is very supportive of one another. And it's like they cast this net around this community and they do whatever they can to support and prop up and help other writers develop. And it's been wonderful to watch and see.
Yeah. And it's nice to have you along for the ride, darling. And
hey.
Speaking of which, what a great co-host, right?
Aw, thank you. I've really enjoyed my time here. And the one thing we did not talk about is I think we should close on what our favorite snack is when we watch content.
Okay.
We have a restaurant that's owned, there are two restaurants, but they're owned by the, David knows exactly where I'm going. It's owned by the same husband and wife team chef. He runs the back of the house, she runs the front of the house. And it's the Craftsman and Blue Ribbon Pizza in Encinitas. They have phenomenal truffle popcorn. And it is good old Wisconsin popcorn, and they use fresh butter and truffle oil and Parmesan Reggiano.
Yeah.
And it's $10 a bag, and it's you pick it up to go, and it literally is in a brown paper grocery bag.
Yeah.
And it is the best popcorn ever.
Yeah.
And David and I will like fight hands as we go to pick the bowl clean. But yeah. That's my favorite snack food is the Craftsman and Blue Ribbon Pizza popcorn.
Yeah, I don't even think I can argue with that. I mean, I can sit here and rattle off a few that I really like, but when we hunker down for the night and it's storming on the rare occasion that it will in San Diego and we want to do a marathon watch fest, then yeah. All right.
That's awesome.
I want to end the show again with a great big thank you to you, my listener and viewer who have supported the show. I'm looking forward to great things in 2022. And Tammy, I have to say this, as you have noticed in the last round of shows, and I'm not going to put you on the spot, but you'll notice that I always do this rapid fire questions.
Oh, I'm up for rapid fire.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't come prepared, but I thought, well, you know, it's my wife and also, okay. Here's one that I use a lot. Mm-hmm. And I always get the most interesting answers for this. So Tammy, you have been invited to my house, which is our house in San Diego for a nice dinner. And you're going to invite two friends to join us to make it a foursome. Living or dead that you'd like to have join us for the evening. We'll have some fine hors d'oeuvres and cocktails and then sit down for a beautiful evening of great food and wine and entertainment and music and so forth. Who would those two people be?
I was thinking I might get dropped in the forest with a rock and pocket knife and a shovel question. I mean, I'm feeling a political slant to this, and I'm not sure why. I think because I'm really enjoying political conversations these days. Let me see. So the first person that comes to mind is I'd be interested to have Barack Obama come to the dinner table and really get into the layers and the pieces of the puzzle about what is happening in our world and kind of this 30,000 foot view of where are we going. I think equally there is a military commentator. His name is David. He's a CBS journalist. I can't remember his last name. He's an older gentleman.
Yeah.
I would be fascinated to hear about his feelings on where we are, our position in the world. So if I had to pick two, I'm thinking political, and it would be Barack Obama and this journalist, David. Sorry, I cannot remember his last name.
All right.
I can see him though.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Great combination, and would be a riveting
evening. Not very sexy.
Doesn't always have to be sexy. Maybe the sexy is the fact that you're there.
Oh, there we go.
See how that works? Thank you once again for my co-host, Tammy Temple, to the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and please be safe out there. Enjoy the rest of your holiday, and we'll see you in January for season 2 of The Thriller Zone.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
Happy New Year, everybody.
The Thriller Zone has been presented by Blackstone Publishing and the exciting new techno thriller 4 Minutes, now available from your favorite bookseller. Learn more at blackstonepublishing.com.